This is how you start a war. Not with a crown of gold, but with a blade of steel. Welcome to the White Book Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones podcast. Founded in 2010 as Two Champs and a Chump, we decided it was time to rebrand and relaunch just in time for the game to do the same with its second edition. Tune in each week for your dose of strategy, discussion, jokes, and good old geek culture. Be sure to check www.whitebookpodcast.com for more content, generally in written form. Huge thanks go out to George R.R. Martin for creating this world, FFG for a great game, all of our contributors, and you, the listeners. Contact us on this site, facebook.com, as well as Twitter, or email contact@whitebookpodcast.com. This Creative Commons music is Townfish by Spoons. Okay, welcome guys to a special, I want to say mini-sode of the White Book. I know I said we weren't going to have any episodes for the next couple weeks while I'm out on honeymoon, but I was able to coerce someone into joining me for a quick interview here, someone who I think in many ways has not gotten nearly enough attention in the past couple weeks. So he was kind enough to join me. Nate, why don't you say hi to the listener?
Hey, it's a pleasure to be on. Thanks a lot, Will, for having me. Yeah, I'm very happy to be here and share my experience with everyone.
So I feel like I should clarify, this is not Nate French, designer of the game, or the second edition game and so on. What actually is your claim to fame?
So I've been playing since first edition, but my current claim to fame is I am the U.S. national champion for Game of Thrones second edition.
Nice. Well done. And here, I thought your claim to fame was going to be playing against me, and I think every melee tournament for the last like 6 years or something.
I think that's true. I don't think I've beaten you once, and in one way or another, you have actually been responsible for me not winning. So,
and I think it should also clarify. I'm pretty certain I did not win all of those tables either. But I'm pretty certain I remember stabbing you in the back.
You know what? That's okay. That's melee. That's why I like melee.
Exactly. And hey, we both tend to play a lot of first edition melee.
Yeah. So Origins is here in Columbus. I've been living here pretty much all my life. So I've been going to the Origins convention a couple times. This is the first time, obviously, that FFG has hosted a nationals event. And it was really cool to see it right there in my hometown. I was very excited to be a part of it. I played with a few of my metamates. Ryan Erickson ended up winning the Melee's National Championship. So it was very nice. Yeah, it was really cool that the Columbus titles stayed in Columbus.
Well, so that's a convention there at Origins that I think many of us have not been to before. There hasn't been Thrones there since like 02 or 03 or something like that. So, you know, I know it used to be a very prestigious event. I feel like it's kind of dropped out of the gaming mainstream a little bit. What can you tell us about the con itself before we delve into the tournament? I know you've been at Gen Con several times, so how would you kind of compare and contrast?
It's kind of just like a mini Gen Con. They have their own dealer's hall that I'm sure anyone who's gone to Gen Con has perused. They have a giant gaming exhibit where all the tabletops and card games are played. So I would say it's pretty comparable to Gen Con, just on a smaller scale. The venue itself is smaller, less people going, but you'll still find the same group of people. I mean, if you've seen any pictures, I was cosplaying that day. There were a lot of people cosplaying, just
who
everyone out. Yeah. everyone out and just having a good time being a nerd. It's pretty much just like Gen Con, just on a smaller scale.
Okay. So you'd recommend it as being worthwhile then?
I definitely would recommend it as being worthwhile. When I go to Gen Con, I don't usually sightsee in Indiana, so I don't know really what's going on out over there. But Columbus is a great city. It's, you know, pretty large, a lot to do there. So if you're deciding between Gen Con and Origins next year, I don't know what the FFP lineup's looking like, but try and squeeze in both if you can. It's a great town, great little convention.
Well, you know, speaking of FFG lineup and such, and whether the con is worth it, I guess kind of naturally leads into this particular kind of line of reasoning. How did you feel about the FFG support? I know we definitely saw kind of pictures and kind of some downer reports of the prize support, but not only that, but also running the tournament and kind of their presence. Like, did that seem, you know, like it was all together? Did that also seem like an afterthought, the way the prizes were? Or did you feel that way about the prize?
So as far as the tournament operation went, I thought everything was very smooth. There wasn't a lot of downtime between rounds. The graduated cut to top 32 seemed pretty appropriate. Everyone got a chance. Well, most people got a chance to play again on the second day. And even those that really couldn't make the top cut 8 were still eligible for additional prizes. So as far as that goes, I really enjoyed it. As for the prize support itself, I was a little let down. When they first brought out the prizes, we could tell immediately that the trophy for the Joust winner looks identical to any regional trophy. Obviously, it says something different on it, but it's the same, you know, size, shape, color, everything's the same about it. So that was a little disappointing. And then we found out that there was no trophy for the Melee champion. So I thought that was also
no trophy at all.
No trophy for the Melee champion. The only differences in prizes were there's a different mat that says Origins Melee Championship or something like that. And even the mat itself was, I think, the same as the regional mat. It's got the Stark Deluxe Box artwork on it, and it's just they've got a direwolf on it instead of Eddard Stark, so... overall, I was a little bit underwhelmed by the prize support.
Yeah, I hadn't actually realized there was no trophy for the Melee winner. I think this depresses me even more on the backs of so many other decisions we've been seeing from FFG this year, that at a time when Melee among the community, I think, is at one of its highest points ever, FFG is treating it like the reddest of red-haired stepchildren, which is disappointing, to say the least.
I think you're right. I would have to agree with that. The showing was only 30 people. By the time, so not a lot of people. When Swiss ended after three rounds, there were only 23 people still in it, and top 16 received playmats. So it wasn't even really a prize, more like a participation prize at that point.
Wow, that's interesting. Well, so, okay, admittedly, Melee attendance fairly low there, which does seem a little odd compared to the general more favorable buzz I get in the community these days. What about attendance for the Joust Championship? Was it pretty strong?
Joust Championship had 85 people. When you're comparing it to numbers like Gen Con, that doesn't seem very high, but I think it's the largest out of any FFG tournaments held this year. So, and, you know, a lot of these players are newer to the second edition scene, but a lot of stiff competition this year.
Okay, so tell me some about, well, actually, before the competition itself, tell me a little bit about what you played, why you played it, how you kind of felt about that going into the day.
So I played Stark Fealty, and prior to Origins, I was doing a lot of testing with this deck, and I noticed that it does pretty well against a Martell or a Lannister matchup, and I was expecting to see a lot of both. So that's my thoughts going into the tournament, was I need a deck that can weed through the field. I don't really like, you know, This is going to sound weird. I don't like to conform. I don't like to play what the entire meta is playing. So I wanted to find something different that would still, you know, hold its own.
Well, if I can break in there. So what sort of tools or strategy do you say Stark Realty has that really gives it that leg up against Lannister and Martell?
Winterfell was definitely the linchpin of the deck. That stops all of the Lannister shenanigans that go on. If you're first player, it can stop Tyrion from grabbing gold. I was using it all day during intrigue challenges to save my characters from Tears of Lys. If they're sitting on two gold and you know they've got the means to bring out Foot to the Sword, you can use it then. It's very versatile. And with Stark's ability to aggress and power rush, as long as no one's throwing any curveballs into your plan, you can pretty much take down the game. So that was my idea, is if I can just stop people from messing with my plans, then I should be good.
Okay, so you mentioned then that Winterfell was one of the keys, and that definitely kind of puts the linchpin toward the character end of things. But I meant to say to the location end of things, but how about the kind of character base? Were there a couple there that really pushed it? You mentioned the power grab, you know, was that the Stark box Eddard, or, you know, how about Caitlyn? Did you go with the core set one to continue to disrupt triggers? Or I've been seeing a lot of folks running Fat Cat these days. Did you move that direction?
I went with the core set Catelyn just to, again, continue off the theme of Winterfell, shutting down your opponent's triggers. Really keep the game, I guess, honest. You know, no surprises, no tricks. Everything was on the board. Fast Eddard from the Stark Deluxe box, along with Robb Stark and Blackfish. That's how you closed out a game. You just get two of those guys, and as long as nothing interrupts your plans, they can pretty much creep to the power. You've got Bran Stark for event control, which is another thing that can kind of mess up what you're doing. And I've noticed that there were not a lot of locations. I mean, Gast and Grey is kind of running around, but I feel like people are tending to lean away from locations in this field. I didn't see a lot of, like, there was no Lannisport. There was no Casterly Rock. I didn't run Frozen Solid in this deck. For that reason, there were times when I just didn't have targets for it. So the deck does really well at controlling characters through Winterfell, ice, stuff like that. I can control events, but I didn't really need location control. So it has a lot of answers.
Okay, one last question, deck-wise, that's on my mind. How did you wind up feeling about card deck, or what did you wind up doing? A lot of Stark's actual draw seems to be pegged to pretty expensive characters. Did you lean that direction, go with plots, just try to focus more on the kind of kill and removal based answers, or how'd that play?
Yeah, I would say a lot of the card advantage came from character removal, like using ice or Winter is Coming, followed up by a March to the Wall. I ran Gates of Winterfell to get some card draw, but that's about it as far. I guess Blackfish draws a card, but I really didn't use him that much. As far as card advantage, you're really just trying to put the pressure on your opponent, and you're not getting a lot of draw as you do in some other decks, but it doesn't really matter, I don't think. I noticed a lot of games, I didn't even have a hand. I was top decking a lot, but if your board state is solid enough, it really doesn't matter. And I think at this point in the game currently, it doesn't matter so much what's in your hand, but what's on the board.
Okay.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
Do you mind if I add something?
No, go right ahead.
Yeah, I just want to talk real quick about some of the play mistakes that were going on during the tournament. Robb St. John was recording some of the games, so you can see those on YouTube. Sorry if I'm, I don't know, cross-posting or whatever. But I just wanted to throw out there, like, play mistakes happen. You can play a game 100 different times and you still will make play mistakes, but I don't want that to discourage anyone. You just have to be comfortable with your deck and know how to play and just make as few play mistakes as possible. I think that's a good way to help take down a tournament. I don't want this to seem random. I was just, I don't know if you know, we have our own channel, Green Dreamers, about that. But
I have. We've posted some links to some of your videos.
That's right. You guys are on
White. Yeah, it's pretty quality stuff.
Thanks. So yeah, I just wanted to talk about play mistakes and how they happen to everyone. Don't get discouraged, but if you can minimize play mistakes, that's how you win games. Sometimes it doesn't take drawing the right cards, but just making them. And that's all I wanted to say on that.
No, that's okay. Well, the one thing I was just going to say to wrap up about the deck is, of course, folks can go check out the full list over on ThronesDB, where you've posted it there, along with a good bit of comments and commentary. So I'll point folks that way. But, you know, building up on the play mistakes, then, how do you feel the day went as a whole? Were there some really sweet matches to recount, or was it pretty run-of-the-mill? Any really, really boneheaded stuff, particularly just awesome, you know, game ending? That was the championship right there at the final table.
The only games I would say were big swings. In my top eight game, I was playing a Stark Lannister deck, and twice during the game, my opponent forgot that ice works on both offense and defense, so they mistakenly walked into an ice thinking that it did not work on defense. And I think, fortunately for me, that really helped secure a game. For the rest of the tournament, I was a little upset after watching the videos that Rob had posted, because I was making a few mistakes, I think, every game. But there's so much going on at one time. You've got, like in this deck, Gates of Winterfell to worry about, Lady moving around, when to use Winterfell to stop shenanigans, when to throw someone in with Wardens of the North. There's just a lot going on. And it's okay if you miss something. As long as you hit the 90%, if you miss that 10%, I think that's okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's a pretty reasonable ratio to try to keep at. I mean, like you said, it's a long day. There's a lot going on. It's hard to stay all the way, you know, perfect, especially by the time you hit the finals match. So as far as matchups go, everything played out pretty well the way you expected. You just faced Lannister and Martell pretty much all the way to the finals, or did anything creep out and surprise you in the field?
It was just a sea of Lannister. My one and only loss of the day was first round. I was playing a Targ Banner of the Lion deck, and top eight, I was the only deck that didn't have some kind of Lannister in it, whether it's the agenda or main faction. And I'm really happy that I ended up, I mean, of course, I'm happy that I won, but I was happy that I won with a non-Lannister build. And I think that, you know, it might show the community that Lannister isn't as overpowered or unbeatable as people were saying it was. There was some diversity. I will say this. I played a Bear of Fealty. You know, I played some Stark Banner of the Lions, not your typical Lannister build. So those were pretty interesting. There was some diversity, but everything was pretty straightforward.
Okay. Well, glad to hear it. I think that you have definitely had a hand in kind of pushing some of the meta development forward that you were hoping for, and pushing things a bit out of that Lannister rut, though. I think also now in a lot of ways, folks are jumping on Stark Fealty all over the place. So
I've noticed that. I've noticed a trend in Stark Fealty. So now for Gen Con, I'm probably going to bring a deck that counters Stark Fealty, but
any thoughts you might give away on what that is?
Honestly, what I've been toying around with right now is the deck that I lost to, a Targ Banner of the Lion deck. I think they can put the pressure on faster than Stark can, and I think that was the key to winning a lot of my games. A lot of people like to save, for example, a lot of people like to save March to the Wall until your opponent only has one character. I like to dwindle them down to two characters during the challenges phase and then marched, so it leaves them with just one character. And that's usually enough pressure to then switch the game in my favor. And this Targ Lannister deck is really good about doing that. You've got Khal Drogo, Illyn Payne, Miri, Crown of Gold. You've got so much kill going on that if you follow up with March, you're usually able to get them down to just one character. And the game writes itself from there.
Nice. Well, I, after having seen some of that type of stuff at our regional, I have to agree that it's a very strong combination still. So we'll see now whether that's the direction you go or if you're just trying to fake everyone and juke back the other direction on the listeners. I keep my eyes on him. He's a crafty guy.
You can't trust anyone who dresses up like Ash Ketchum at a Game of Thrones tournament.
Is that what you were cosplaying? Oh, my. Wrong game.
Wrong game.
Though there's bound to be some kind of good mashup with Game of Thrones and Pokemon, right? Replacing the Pokeballs with Dragon's Eggs or something?
I mean,
I think there's some ground.
You got to be the very best. Like no one ever was.
You do. All right. Well, thanks for joining us. Any parting thoughts about Origins and your experience and your newfound place of glory?
After talking with a lot of the people at Origins, found out that, you know, the reason attendance might have been low is people had to decide between Gen Con and Origins, and a lot of people opted for Gen Con. If something like this happens next year, I would say try and go for both. If you can, it was a great experience seeing everyone. You know, these are people you only see a few times a year, and it's just a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. Will, I want to say thanks for having me on here. I'm sorry how rusty and stoic this was. This is my first interview, and I hope that doesn't deter you from bringing me back in future episodes. But I just really appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, dude, I think it was a solid interview. I just apologize for having to rush it a little bit. In case the listeners didn't catch it, I'm trying to squeeze this in over my lunch hour right after the July 4th holiday. But yeah, thank you for joining us, man, and congratulations again. Hopefully we can get you back on again before long.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Will. It was a great time being on.